Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm Brian DeNovellis, and say hello to December. Will it be a December to remember for our college basketball teams in the Tri-State? Well, it's been a great start for sure for Princeton and St. Peter's, both teams picking up impressive road wins on Tuesday. If you didn't see, Princeton won at St. Joe's. And if you recall, St. Joe's is always a tough place to play for any opponent. That is where Princeton lost last year. They were 9-0 and suffered their first loss of the season. So a little revenge for the Tigers. St. Peter's also going to Duquesne and knocking off the Dukes. Listen, Duquesne, I don't care what their record is. I think it was 1-6. But anytime a team from the MAC can go to Duquesne and win, that is impressive. So we'll have more on the Tigers, more on the Peacocks later in the pod. Plenty to get to. St. John's, UConn, both teams struggling during feast week. They came back home with much-needed wins. We're going to talk Rutgers as well. How will they bounce back? And we'll see if they can open up Big Ten play with a big opportunity on the road against Ohio State. We'll get to that. Of course, we heard the passing last week of legendary St. John's coach Lou Carnesecca, just one of the great people. Forget about coaches, just one of the great human beings ever in this sport. I'll give my thoughts on that. We'll get to Seton Hall's struggles as well. We'll talk MAC as the MAC conference tips off play this week with some big-time matchups with a lot of teams early on getting to know where they stand, including Ryder and Fairfield tipping things off. We will get to all of that and the Ivy League right after I thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. He is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth or Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, we begin the show with St. John's. The passing of Louis, 99 years old, and when you think of Louis Carnesecca, what comes to mind immediately? St. John's glory days in the 1980s, when he had St. John's at the center of the college basketball universe. Those teams, those St. John's teams, were the teams that I grew up with. I loved Big East basketball growing up as a teenager. I grew up with the Big East. I think I was nine years old when the Big East first started. It was 79-80. And St. John's was right there. You know, you remember guys like David Russell and Billy Goodwin, and then handing the torch to Mullen and Walter Berry and Bill Wennington and Willie Glass and, of course, Mark Jackson. St. John's was New York, and Louis Carnesecca brought in New York guys, right? Wennington was from Long Island, the Canadian via Long Island, and you had Mullen from Xaverian, and you had Mark Jackson from Bishop Lachlan. These were New York City stars in high school, legends, and they stayed home to play for Louis. Everybody, if you were a New York City point guard, I mean, there was, who was it? Kenny Anderson that I saw on Twitter said how hard Louis went after him and how much he wanted to play for St. John's, but he felt like he needed to go away to Georgia Tech. But Louis had that kind of draw, charisma. You will not find anyone who ever had a bad thing to say about Louis. He was probably more gracious when your team beat St. John's than when he beat you. And not many people can say that about other coaches. You'll always hear coaches, you know, compliment the other team when they beat them. It's very easy to compliment the other coach when you beat them. But trust me, listen to coaches, especially big-time coaches. And Bill Self is the king of this. Bill Self never compliments the other team. Louis was never like that. Never. He always complimented the other team, win or lose. And I read some quotes from PJ Carlissimo and a great article by Jerry Carino in the Asbury Park Press. And that's where PJ learned and got his class from in losing, from Louis. And of course, the great sweater, right? The ugly sweater that brought St. John's all those wins. Of course, it was the sweater that got the wins. And then John Thompson mimicked the sweater in that great battle between Georgetown and St. John's. I think it was number one versus number two in 1985. Leading St. John's to the Final Four that year. The sweater. You think of Louis, you think of the sweater, the smile, the charisma. That St. John's team that went to the Final Four was number one in the country. That St. John's team in an era when the Big East was loaded in 1985 with three Final Four teams, still the first and only conference in the nation that has sent three teams to the Final Four in 1 year, Georgetown, Villanova, and St. John's. And St. John's went 15-1 in that conference against Georgetown, Syracuse, Villanova. Boston College was great in those days. They must have had, I'm sure they had Michael Adams in those days. They also had guys like Dominic Presley and Roger McCready. I mean, the Big East just had players and dudes up and down, and they went 15-1 that year. And every time, even though they didn't win the national championship, that team, those teams were revered for St. John's and always immortalized. And then Walter Berry coming in, the junior college number one player and becoming the player of the year, right? Chris Mullin, national player of the year. Walter Berry, national player of the year. You know, they had dudes up and down during those years. Just really good, really gracious, really well-coached teams, and you knew you were always going to get a battle. And as a young teenager who was impressionable, who played basketball and loved the Big East, the college hoops, I had so much respect for guys like Luke Arneseca, still to this day. So St. John's mourns the passing of him, and I'm sure we will, you know, see a lot of things. They're talking about getting a patch, and they're talking about, you know, warm-ups in honor of Louis. So it's going to be all season long, because someone like that who had more than 500 career wins, whose number, you know, whose name is up in the rafters at Madison Square Garden, whose name is right up there with Joe Lapchick, whose name is right up there with the greats of the men who built the Big East, right? Dave Gavitt and John Thompson and Jim Boeheim and Raleigh Massimino, and then handing it off to Jim Calhoun, right? Those, the giants, the legends who built the Big East, and Mike Trangisi, of course. So, Louis, a huge reason why I'm a Big East basketball fan, a huge reason why the Big East had so much success then and now. R.I.P. Louis Carneseca. Our condolences to the Carneseca family. St. John's is trying to pick up the pieces and move on after a very disappointing showing in the Bahamas. And it didn't help that Davon Smith had a run-in and verbal confrontation with Rick Pitino and was benched and left the bench, according to reports, after he was benched against Georgia in the second half. Instead of handling it himself, Rick Pitino decided, I'm going to let the players handle it. He did a similar thing with R.J. Lewis after Lewis kicked the ball into the stands earlier this year. So he left it up to the players as to what the punishment would be for Davon Smith. And the players spoke. Smith did not play against Harvard. It was a sloppy performance, but a win that St. John's needed. Harvard made it close late, but St. John's did enough. And Kadari Richmond, who really has been a major disappointment up to this point, had his best game of the season with 18 points and 8 rebounds and 4 assists. Still, you wonder where Kadari is. Still, you wonder, will Kadari be able to excel like he did at Seton Hall the last 2 years. We know he's not the man. We know there's much more talent around him, but that's no excuse. Kadari Richmond, you were the number one transfer in the portal. The number one transfer. So you're expected to go to St. John's and do great things. You're expected to come to St. John's with other players around you and play like an All-Big East first-team player that you were last year. Play like a preseason first-team All-Big East player that you were named to this year, and some people were talking you up as the best player and the player of the year in the conference. He has been nowhere near that. Now, will this game against Harvard jumpstart him? Who knows? Maybe. But I need to see more of him with Davon Smith in the backcourt, because this was something that was talked about in the offseason. Would Kadari and Davon Smith be able to coexist? Two alpha male point guards in the same system on the court together. At times, they've looked pretty good, but it's been few and far between. We haven't seen Kadari Richmond and Davon Smith at their best in the same game yet. And I wonder if that will be able to happen this year. Odds are it will, but how often? Kadari Richmond needs to step up his game, needs to figure out when to take over games and when to get his and set up his teammates. He doesn't have to score 20 points, but I'm talking a player who, you know, over the last couple of years was averaging 15, 16 points a game, 7 rebounds, 5.5, 6 assists, and his numbers are down. His scoring is down. His assists are down. His scoring's way down. He's barely averaging 10 points a game. So St. John's desperately needs him to get going. We'll see if Davon Smith plays against Kansas State on Saturday. I'm going to guess that he will, that he served his time, and he'll be back in there. But how does he respond? And what does that mean for Jaden Glover? The freshman from the Patrick School took advantage of no Davon Smith, played a season-high 20 minutes and had 11 points. So I'd love to see him develop. And what about Simeon Wiltshire, right? He is a player that many St. John's fans, including myself, thought would take that leap this year and be a player who would consistently, you know, average 8 to 10 points and you know, or maybe more. He's got a game, but he's really struggled with his jump shot. And, you know, it can get in a player's mind when they're not playing. And then they go in there and they press, and then they miss their first jump shot. They get in their own heads, and maybe that's what's happening with Sim Wiltshire. But look, there's a lot of players over there, and there's only one basketball. And I think that's what we're seeing right now with St. John's. So they've hit some troubled times. How do they respond to adversity? You learn a lot about a team after losses and after tough times. How do they rise up? K-State is a team they have to beat. It's an average Big 12 team. They haven't even played a true road game this year. I expect a high-scoring game. K-State averages over 80 points a game. But you're not playing Kansas. You're not playing Baylor. This is a game that St. John's has to win at home on Saturday. If they don't, look out, okay? But I expect them to bounce back. I expect them to win. We'll see if Davon Smith plays. We'll see how he responds. Kadari, a lot of things to see with this St. John's team, all right? And you know, will Zuby continue to have a seesaw, you know, a roller coaster season, or can we see some more consistency out of him at the center position? Okay, let's get to UConn. They are licking their wounds after 0-3 in Maui. And if you saw the quotes from Dan Hurley this week, he was saying, we will never, ever play in a feast week tournament where we're playing three games. We're only going to play, you know, home and homes with national big five, you know, power five teams. We're only going to play home and homes. We're going to play in these one game showcases, but we're not going to play in another one of these you know, three games in 3 days events. And who can blame them, right? You know, it was bad enough that they lost the opening game to a talented Memphis team, but then to lose to Colorado and Dayton, so many question marks. Unfortunately, Alex Caravan is still suffering from a concussion, so he has concussion-like symptoms, and you cannot rush that. You can't, because as long as there are symptoms there, they're not going to put him out there, right? And you have the baseline test, and you have to be free from symptoms for 5 consecutive days, and you have a return to practice. There's protocol. UConn is taking the cautious steps. They have to be very careful with him. But at a program like UConn, as Hurley said, even without their best player and leading scorer, it's time for others to step up. And I'm quoting Hurley said, some people are going to have to announce themselves in college basketball. Some people are going to have to announce themselves in college basketball. What does that mean? Start playing like the name on your jersey. Have the pride and that you play for UConn basketball. And we need people to step up in the absence of our captain. Who is he talking about? Solo Ball, Terrace Reed, Liam McNeely, Jaden Ross, Jalen Stewart. He named them by names. And Stewart did respond, 16 points against Harvard. So he took advantage of more playing time. He struggled to find the court this year for a lot of minutes, but he was somebody who certainly stepped up on Saturday. Okay, so UConn, big test ahead, big week ahead. Number 15 Baylor coming in on Wednesday night, Big 12, Big East battle. We saw Baylor against St. John's when Jeremy Roach hit the three-pointer at the buzzer. That backcourt is loaded with Norchad Omier, the transfer from Miami, and Roach, the transfer from Duke. So how does UConn handle that great backcourt? We know Baylor's good, but UConn's at home. They're at Stores. The crowd will be rowdy. It is an undermanned team. But if they can win this game, the young guys will have stepped up and matured and announced themselves to college basketball, like Hurley said. And then UConn goes to Texas over the weekend. And that is a fascinating game because Texas has a very good backcourt. And winning in Austin is never easy. They have one of the best freshmen in the country. I believe the second best freshman in the country behind Dylan Harper in Trey Johnson, the former McDonald's All-American. He's scoring 21 points a game as a freshman. He is lighting it up for the Longhorns. He scored in double figures in every game. And he is right there with Dylan Harper and Cooper Flagg as the top three freshmen in the country. And if Ace Bailey ever gets going, he's in that discussion too. But Trey Johnson, UConn will have their hands full with Trey. And Arthur Kaluma, UConn fans will remember Arthur Kaluma, who spent his first 2 years at Creighton before spending last year at Kansas State. It's hard to keep track of all these players with the portal, right? I mean, three teams in 3 years for Arthur Kaluma. But he can play, all right? So that is going to be a tough task for UConn. Look, they can lose both games, all right? If Caravan doesn't come back, they could lose both of these games. They could also win both. So we'll see how a young and vulnerable and a team who's facing adversity, we'll see how UConn responds, all right? Speaking of responding, let's go to Seton Hall because they hit rock bottom after losing to Monmouth. And you saw the net rankings this week. They opened at 200 in the net. Since the net's been around, that's got to be the lowest that Seton Hall has ever been. All right, you suffer a loss to Monmouth. I don't care if you had Dylan Adeyewusu or not. NIL or no NIL, that is the first time Seton Hall has ever lost to Monmouth. I believe it's now, 1-15 or 1-16? Monmouth is all time, right? They had lost their first 15 or 16 games against Seton Hall. That is the first time ever. And Seton Hall knew. All right, Seton Hall knew you had to stop Abdi Bashir. He hit 10 threes against Rutgers. Monmouth has one player, with all due respect to the rest of that team. And I know Jack Collins, I love him, saw him at Manasquan High School, all right? The pride of Manasquan. I know he's a good college player, but really, there's one player on that court that was a concern for Seton Hall. They had 1 week to prepare for him, 1 week after an impressive showing in Charleston. And Dylan Adewusu or not, you cannot lose to Monmouth. That game, they weren't even competitive in the second half. They didn't just lose the game by a point at the buzzer. They lost by 12 points. What have we learned about Seton Hall? They are an awful offensive team. All right? They can be an elite defensive team if they want to play defense. But if they don't want to play defense and they're not committed to it and they don't follow the game plan, then that is what you get. Seton Hall can lose to any team in the country. Sometimes you hear people say, oh, we can play with any team in the country. We can beat any team in the country. That is not true of Seton Hall, okay? But they can lose to any team in the country. And it may not be a fact, but that's as close to a fact as you can get, all right? They've already lost to Fordham, Hofstra, and now Monmouth. I have been following Seton Hall basketball closely since 1987-88. I followed Big East basketball since I was 9 or 10 years old. I can confidently say, since 88, this is the worst offensive Seton Hall team that I have ever seen, period. There have been worse teams, all right? Those P.J. Carlissimo teams and in early on at Seton Hall and in 83-84, 84-85, 85-86, I mean, those were awful Seton Hall teams. They were at the bottom of the Big East. But they had some players who could play. When you have NIL money, okay, and let's make this clear. Seton Hall is not St. John's in NIL. It's not Villanova in NIL. It's not UConn in NIL. It's not Xavier. It's not Creighton. We get it. But there was enough money there to go around, all right? And whatever the rumors are, right? We don't know exactly, $1.2 million, $1.4 million. I've heard Villanova's budget was upwards of $3 or $4 million, right? Just look at Villanova, who probably has three times the NIL budget. It's not how much money you have, it's how you spend it and your return on investment. Villanova, the last 2 years with NIL, has struck out left and right. And they're losing to St. Joe's, and they're losing to Columbia, and they're losing to Penn, and they're losing all kinds of bye games with 10 times the NIL. So it's not about the how much, it's how it's spent. They have struck out on Garway Duel. They have struck out on Zion Harmon. These players were supposed to be the point guards of Seton Hall. You're talking about a top 50 player out of high school in Garway Duel, a top 80 player out of high school in Zion Harmon. These are four-star point guards. So did Shaheen Holloway, you know, overestimate what these guys could do in college? Well, what about Kim English at Providence? What about other coaches who recruited them, right? Because there were 15, 20 offers for these guys. Scotty Middleton, the jury's still out, another four-star. These players were counted on not just to come here and be role players, but to come here and start and be integral part of the offense and contribute major minutes and major points. So right there, you're talking about three important players in NIL transfers who have not lived up to their ratings. Until and if they do, Seton Hall is in for a long, long season. They're going to have to win with defense, period. And if they don't play defense every single minute of every single game, they can lose to anybody, period. So they need to get right against NJIT, all right? They are facing another team in Oklahoma State who's at the bottom of the Big 12, that is a winnable game at home. But if they don't play defense, they're going to lose to NJIT and Oklahoma State as well. All right, and then they have a week to get ready for Rutgers. So we'll see if Seton Hall can win the next two. And that brings us to Rutgers. Rutgers. Not a bad showing in Vegas, okay? They went 1-2. What did we learn about Rutgers? We learned that they can compete with top 25 teams. We learned that they are a top 25 caliber team who's still young, who's still trying to figure it out, who has had trouble closing out games. Turnover at the end of the Kennesaw State game that was a disaster. Ace Bailey threw it away. They were in the game, very much so, against Alabama. I mean, my goodness, that was one of the college basketball games of the year. And Dylan Harper, I'll get back to their late game. I'll get to Dylan Harper in a second. But he nearly willed them to victory against Alabama, okay? And again, Rutgers had chances late in that game. Rutgers had chances late in the game against Texas A&M, but they could not convert late. Turnovers, Zach Martini had a couple of costly turnovers late in the game against Texas A&M that hurt them. They did convert against Notre Dame. They did make shots in overtime against Notre Dame and had to hold off an all-time performance by Matt Alaco, the former star at Princeton, who nearly carried Notre Dame to victory in that game. So Rutgers was in every game. Rutgers could have won every game. Rutgers could have lost every game. They are an incredible offensive team, which we knew. They are not a good defensive team. They will never, this team will never be a great defensive team this year. I don't care how much practice you have. You're talking about three, four freshmen who are getting major minutes, certainly three, in Harper, Bailey, and Somerville. All right, you're getting guys who are brought in to play offense, like P.J. Hayes. Zach Martini's a nice role player, but he's not a great defender. All right, so Steve Peichel has his work cut out for him defensively, and he knows that. So how good can Rutgers get defensively will determine how they'll be able to compete and win this year. There are going to be games where Harper and Bailey and whoever that third option is, and the last couple of games, it's been Jeremiah Williams who's been there. So if they can get three players scoring, there are going to be plenty of games where Rutgers outscores the opponent and can win. But what about those games, those one possession games late, right? Where you need a defensive stop. You need a bucket. We've seen this before. We saw it in St. John's in the preseason. We saw it, you know, late against Notre Dame where they converted. We saw it against Kennesaw State. We saw it against Texas A&M. Can they get a defensive stop or can they get a bucket when they need it? When you have the best freshman in the country with the ball in his hands in Dylan Harper, a guy who scored back-to-back 30-point games, 36 one night against Notre Dame, 37 the next night against Alabama, you're going to score. And you're in good hands. But when a coach like Buzz Williams and Texas A&M shut you down, what are the alternatives? Because they did an outstanding job on making life difficult for Harper. Okay? So who else is going to step up? I said this on Twitter, and I'll say it here in the podcast. Rutgers will go so far as their role players can push them. I'm not going to say carry them because the heavy lifting is going to be done by the two freshmen, which is not ideal, but that's the way this team was built. Bailey and Harper, they're going to do the heavy lifting. Who else is going to push those guys from behind over the top? Is it Jeremiah Williams? Is it Zach Martini, who has done it before at Princeton. Who is going to be that third scorer, that some other player who needs to step up for Rutgers? They need more help than just two players. Is it Jordan Dirkak? Is it Tyson Acuff? Can he get healthy? Can he get 100% by January? Who's it going to be? Jamichael Davis? Somebody needs to step up, all right? And they need three, four, five players. Rutgers has a week to get ready for Ohio State. They're in a great spot. Ohio State, this would be a quad one road win for Rutgers. A team in Ohio State that's 5-2, a team that is in the top 30 of the net. Rutgers has struggled there in the past, but it's an Ohio State team that they have to go to Maryland this week on Wednesday and then host Rutgers on Saturday. Rutgers has the week off. Rutgers will be rested going into Columbus. Great opportunity for Rutgers because then they have Penn State at home on Tuesday. If they could start the Big Ten season 2-0, they would make a statement to the rest of the conference. All right? They're dealing with a guy in Bruce Thornton, who is one of the best guards in the Big Ten, who is one of the best guards in the country. I believe his turnover to assist ratio, his assist to turnover ratio is 6-1. That is unheard of. 6-1. All right. One of the best point guards in the country in that. And he is going to be a handful. So does Rutgers have a defensive player? Maybe they'll put Dirkak on him, who can slow down Bruce Thornton. All right. Devin Royal is another player who's had a couple of double-doubles this year and is shooting 70% from the floor. So what can Rutgers do defensively to slow him down? Will it likely be Ace Bailey on him? Right? Can Ace Bailey play defense and rebound like they need him to? So big test for Rutgers against Ohio State and then home to Penn State. Got a split. I don't think a loss to Ohio State crushes them because there are plenty, plenty of quad one opportunities that will lie ahead. All right. They're going to have to wait until January because there's no quad one opportunities after Ohio State. But there's going to be plenty come January when you're facing Indiana, when you're facing Wisconsin, when you're facing Purdue, when you're facing UCLA, and on and on and on. All right? So it's not the end of the world if they lose to Ohio State, but boy, would it make a statement if they could go 2-0 in the Big Ten before January hits. All right? So that's Rutgers. Now let's talk the Ivy League. And what a game for Xavien Lee against St. Joe's, going on the road into a tough environment. And Xavien Lee gets the first triple-double in Princeton history. 18 points, 13 rebounds, 10 assists. This is the Xavien Lee that Princeton needs. Princeton doesn't need the Xavien Lee who scores 25 points, 30 points. They need Xavien Lee to score in the 15 to 20 point range. You're not going to get 13 rebounds. That's a career high. But if he can get 5-6 rebounds and hand out 5 or 6 assists, Princeton is much better off. That's the Xavien Lee they need. They don't need the one-on-one Xavien Lee jacking up shots and trying to impress the NBA scouts. This is what they need. Xavien Lee setting up his teammates, Xavien Lee reading what the defense gives him, and Xavien Lee being the leader of this team, all right? Big win for Princeton. Remember last year they lost to St. Joe's. Big win for them on the road. Maybe this turns things around for them. Hard to believe. Hard to believe that in the history and how many great players they've been at Princeton, that this is the first triple-double in school history. Now, mind you, when Bill Bradley was playing, okay, and he was one of the best players in college basketball and went on to star for the Knicks. When Bill Bradley was playing, they didn't count assists as a as an official statistic in college basketball until like 1974. So he might have done it, and we don't even know about that, okay? But he is. This is the first time in the history of Princeton basketball that we have seen a triple-double. So congratulations to Xavien Lee, all right? They don't win this game, though, without Philip Byreal, because Byreal was somebody who you don't count on to do what he did in this game. He scored a career-high 18 points on six threes. That's not going to happen every game. But when you get production like that and you get Caden Pierce doing what he does and you get the complimentary games from everybody else, Princeton is right there with the best teams in the Ivy League where they need to be. Now, another Ivy League team that is right there with the best teams in the Ivy League, did you know the longest current active winning streak in the country is in the Bronx? Columbia University, coached by our old friend from NJIT. I'm going back to my days at News 12 New Jersey when NJIT became a Division I program. It was making noises, all right, was making some noise in the old, I think it was the Great West Conference. NJIT couldn't even find a conference, okay? And they threw them out in the Great West. But Jim Engels built NJIT into a winning program. He went to Columbia back in 2016, and he has struggled. He has struggled to build this program, but Columbia has stuck with him. They have not had a winning season since Engels took over. But what they're doing now, 8-0, led by a great backcourt in Geronimo Rubio De La Rosa and Kenny Nolan. All right, they're carrying the Lions to heights they haven't seen in 8-9 years. De La Rosa is averaging 22 points a game. He's making serious consideration. I know they haven't played an Ivy League game yet, but he is right there in the discussion for Ivy League Player of the Year 1 month into the season. Scored a career-high 37 against Stony Brook. You may have read that when he was named the National Player of the Week a couple of weeks ago. So he is making noise. Nolan is also averaging double figures. So between those two, they are cooking. All right? They are cooking. And Jim Engels is the talk of the Ivy League right now with Columbia. They're playing Albany. And if they can win this game tonight against Albany, Columbia could be looking at a situation where they win two more after that, and then they play a Fairfield game, which could be tricky on December 28th. We could be looking at a 12-0 undefeated Columbia team coming to Jersey Mike's Arena and playing Rutgers on December 30th. Rutgers fans, keep an eye on Columbia. They could be 12-0. All of those games, they will be favored. So, shades of Princeton last year when they started the year 9-0, and then I think they were 13-1. All right, Columbia is right on track if they could win their next four, and they'll be favored to be 12-0, and how cool would that be coming to Jersey Mike's Arena? And what Engels is doing is very impressive, okay? Because last year, they showed progress, but progress in the Ivy League got them 4-10, all right? There were plenty of games last year that Columbia lost close nail-biters to the likes of Brown and Cornell and Harvard, all right? But the 3 years before that combined, Columbia went 4-38. 4-38 in 3 years. Finally, they showed progress last year. We'll see where it goes from here. They already have a huge road win at Villanova, this Columbia team does. So look out. Jim Engels has the Lions playing, beat Albany tonight, and they're going to be in good shape heading into Christmas and should come out of Christmas at 11-0, hosting Fairfield on December 28th, followed by Rutgers two nights later on December 30th. And at the beginning of the year, we thought it was Princeton, Yale, and Brown, and everybody else. But now Columbia has very much entered the discussion. And a decade ago, 15 years ago, it was Penn and Princeton forever in the Ivy League. Penn and Princeton and everybody else. Not the case anymore. Columbia, this is not your father's Columbia team. This is not your uncle's Columbia team, your grandfather's Columbia team. This is Jim Engel's Columbia team, and they are a team to be reckoned with. And last but not least on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, let's talk MAC. Let's talk MAC. I opened the show with St. Peter's, big win over Duquesne on the road. Bryce Eaton, the redshirt freshman, he is cooking. What he did over his last couple of games has been awesome for the Peacocks, because on Saturday, over the weekend, I think it was Saturday, FDU and St. Peter's were locked in a two-point game. FDU scores with 3.5 seconds left, and the game is tied. We're going overtime. Instead, Bryce Eaton takes the inbounds pass and dribbles the length of the court in 3.5 seconds and lays it in at the buzzer. 3.5 seconds. Do you know how hard that is? All right, shades of those of you that remember Tyus Edney. Remember him, UCLA point guard? Look it up, Tyus Edney, NCAA tournament. He goes coast to coast in the second round to win the game and lay it in at the buzzer. And I believe that was in 5 seconds. He had to zig and zag. Bryce Eaton, the redshirt freshman, goes coast to coast in 3.5 seconds. You cannot do it any faster. So St. Peter's stuns FDU at the buzzer. And then a couple of days later, they go to Duquesne. And let's face it, you know, Duquesne's down a little bit this year. But it's a team that, you know, should certainly beat St. Peter's. All right. It's a team that is in the Atlantic 10 and should not lose to a MAC team. But yet, I don't care what the record is. It's 1-7 now. St. Peter's goes to Duquesne and wins the game. All right. Nice game out of Mohamed Sow. He had 11 points in this game. Bryce Eaton had 11 points in this game. Marcus Randolph had 11 points in this game. And now St. Peter's has road wins at Duquesne, FDU, Maryland, Baltimore County. They've played Seton Hall tough. They have played Rutgers tough. And they are ready for the MAC. They host Manhattan on Friday. They're heavily favored in that game. And then they visit Iona on Sunday. So something to look out for with St. Peter's. All right. Who is going to make some noise early in the wide open MAC? The MAC tips off tonight. Ryder at Fairfield, two teams who are always in the, recently in the upper half of the MAC. Ryder is the only team in the country with four true road wins. St. Peter's has three. Ryder's the only team in the country with four true road wins. At San Diego, Coppin State, Navy, and Bucknell. This is going to be, if you like MAC basketball, this is going to be a great game. All right? In the history of the programs, I believe Fairfield owns the all-time head-to-head with Ryder at 39-36. All right? They beat them twice last year. These two teams always play tough basketball games. Tariq Ingram is one of Ryder's best players. He's coming off his first double-double of the season when he had 12 points and 11 rebounds against Delaware. So Ingram's a player to watch out for. The Stags, Of course, they have Profit Johnson, who's been a stud for them early on. Jamie Bergens is coming off a 20-point game in Fairfield's last game. So this is a really good test. A really good test. And keep an eye out on that. I already mentioned St. Peter's Manhattan. We've got Sacred Heart hosting Iona on Friday. And I mention that because this is the opening, the reopening of the Pitt Center. Sacred Heart comes to the MAC this year. And, you know, like Central Connecticut, like Rider, a lot, you know, well, I shouldn't say Rider, but a lot of these Northeast Conference teams or former Northeast Conference teams, you know, glorified high school gymnasiums. But now, if you go online and look at the Pitt Center and Sacred Heart, they have seats all the way around. It's a lot like Quinnipiac's arena. I think it's similar in size, maybe a little smaller than Quinnipiac's and Fairfield's. You're talking about seating all the way around. It is gorgeous. And this will be history because Sacred Heart will play their first game in the MAC, first game ever in the MAC at the Pitt Center that has been renovated and reopened. And they're playing the most storied team in MAC history, the team that has won more MAC championships than any other team in Iona, and a team that has struggled but is growing in confidence under Tobin Anderson. So once again, two friends, Anthony Latina and Tobin Anderson, who went head-to-head in the Northeast Conference. They played last year as non-conference opponents, and now they will play again this year. So interesting game, to say the least, on Friday. And then Sacred Heart goes to Quinnipiac on Sunday. And before I leave, I do want to say my condolences to my good friend Anthony Latina. Anthony lost his mother. And this was several, you know, a few months after he lost his father. So really in the span of 2024, in the span of maybe 5 months, Anthony lost his father over the summer and now his mother right before Thanksgiving. So very challenging times for the Latina family. I know they're a very, very close-knit family, and they'll get through this, but my thoughts and prayers go out to Anthony. He is as good a human being as I know. Extremely personable, extremely funny, but something like this really hits you, and, you know, he was where he had to be with his family. So he then came back, rejoined the team. They had a tough start to the season at 0-4. They have since won two straight and 3 of 4, including big road wins at Central Connecticut. I think that was home, but they beat Central Connecticut at the Pitt Center, and they won at Boston University. So maybe they're starting to turn things around. But, you know, Anthony coaches this season with a heavy heart, knowing that his mother and father lived great lives, long, healthy, prosperous lives, and they are now in a better place. So, Anthony, my condolences to you, my friend, thoughts and prayers to you and your family. I know every day that you're out there coaching, you will be thinking of your parents, and your team will see how they respond with a very tough weekend coming up, home to Iona and at Quinnipiac, the preseason favorites, and a team that, oh, by the way, has struggled. I can't wait to see what the records are come Sunday night in the MAC and see where all these teams are, because quite frankly, we could see a bunch of 1-1 teams at the top of the standings. There might not be a 2-0 team at the end of this weekend in the MAC conference. Don't be surprised. All right, that will do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Before we go, I want to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. Give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. That will do it for this show. My thanks to all of the listeners who are downloading and sharing and spreading the word of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm sorry it's been a while since my last podcast. I was in London with the family, and if you ever get a chance in your life to go to London, do it. It is one of the coolest cities to not only walk around, but, you know, go to pubs, experience all types of cuisine from all over the world. Of course, you have world-famous pubs. get a soccer match. We saw West Ham against Arsenal at London Stadium. That was an experience. We saw the White Cliffs of Dover, Big Ben Parliament. Hey, kids, Big Ben Parliament. Hey, kids, Big Ben Parliament. Everywhere you go, there is something to see and something to do in London. Do yourself a favor, get there someday, and you will not regret it. You can walk everywhere and see so many different neighborhoods, so many different cuisines, pubs, history, Westminster Abbey, you name it, soccer. Can't say enough good things about London. Get there if you can. Until next time, enjoy the basketball, everyone. I will see you next time right here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So long.